Welcome to the Bigger Cashflow Podcast, where we interview business owners and real estate investors that share tips and tricks on how to grow your cash flow and reach financial freedom.
What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Bigger Cash Flow Podcast. This marks episode 3 of a new series of purchasing your first rental property in 2020. So the first episode was about goal setting and getting your mindset right. The second episode was about finding the market to buy your first rental property, so that market analysis. Now, this is going to be one of the most crucial parts in your investing business, which is finding the right team. And by team, I like to, you know, use the words of David Green from Long Distance Real Estate Investing of getting your core four, which is your property manager, your contractor, your broker or agent, and last but not least, your lender. So those four individuals or teams are really going to help drive a lot of the processes in terms of purchasing your property, rehabbing it, managing it, and refinancing. So I wanted to kick things off in terms of the core four by talking about a property manager. So if you were to ask me out of the four, which is your most critical piece, I would honestly say the property manager is the most important part of that core four. And reason being is you can purchase a property at a discount. You can even rehab it the way that you want it to. But at the end of the day, if you're not placing the right tenants to be in the property, live in the property, and just cash flow, then you're gonna be what I call bleeding out slowly over the long run. So you wanna make sure that you find a property manager who's good at communicating, can find the right tenants, and really manage your property like a business. So making sure that they get the right people to do the maintenance work and addressing any deferred maintenance and making sure that client or tenant needs are addressed in a timely manner. And I don't really, you know, envy the property manager's job by any means, which is why I don't self-manage, and we can discuss that a little later, is that the property manager is essentially serving two masters. On the one hand, you have the landlord or the owner who is your client, and you want to make sure that their properties are taken care of. But on the other hand, you are also providing quality housing to a lot of different individuals and families. And sometimes the interests of those two parties are not always aligned. Maybe you have an owner who wants to just make sure that they maximize cash flow every month after month, and you have another tenant who is continuing to put in work orders month after month. So there is that fine balance between making sure that there isn't deferred maintenance and it's quality housing versus also making sure that, you know, you're not overdoing it on the rehab, because at the end of the day, this is not a residential retail flip. This is a rental property. So on the topic of self-managing versus hiring a property manager, this was one of the first questions that I really had to ask myself in terms of where is my highest and best use of my time and my expertise. Off the bat, I definitely knew that I was not an expert in any of the markets that I'm investing in, let alone being a property manager, because aside from the screening process, there are laws and regulations in each market and local city ordinances that you need to be aware of. For example, in Indianapolis, I came across this as I was investing, is that there are historical districts that you need to know and be aware of to make sure that you're not breaking any rules or regulations. So I also kind of approached it from a cash flow perspective. I baked in an 8 to 10% buffer in each of my deals and made sure that I underwrote them even if it has property management in place, I'm still able to cash flow and hit the returns that I would like to see. There are a couple reasons why I truly believe that hiring a third-party property manager is usually more efficient. Because number one, your overall expenses are reduced. Most of the property managers that I work with in Indianapolis, Kansas City, or Little Rock have more than 200 doors under management, and they're able to negotiate discounted rates with many of their contractors just due to the volume of business that they bring them. And sometimes when you're just a person doing it yourself, you have to call that handyman or plumber who is going to charge $60-$70 an hour. And number two, I feel like a good property manager is able to bring their expertise in terms of marketing and advertising their properties to make sure that they reduce the vacancy time and also maximize the rent potential. If they have 200 doors that they're managing and they're very familiar with the area, if they're very specific in their niche, you as a newer investor with maybe a dozen doors even, might not know what exact rent you're able to push for. And pricing is always key and timing is always key. You don't want to be the most expensive house on the block, in my opinion. You want to be slightly below where you have multiple people applying for that home and you're able to choose from a pool of potential tenants. Another advantage of having an experienced property manager that you pay is that they're gonna save you time on the back end administrative and office work, whether it be finding tenants and placing ads, handling the work orders and repair requests, collecting the actual rent, and doing the bookkeeping. You might end up spending a lot of hours per month doing all of these administrative things when you should be using your time to finding new deals, networking, building relationships with other people so you can continue to acquire, because there is going to be a critical mass where if you hit a certain number of properties, you're going to reduce the overall overhead for managing and scaling your portfolio. But if you're into the weeds of the day-to-day of doing the back office accounting stuff, then you're spending less and less time generating leads, negotiating deals, and buying them. And if you really think about it, for a $1,000 unit, if it's 10% of gross rents going to the property manager, that's only $100 a month. And that's $1,200 a year. Yes, that could be a lot of money across your portfolio if you have dozens and dozens of properties. But let's just say you have three or four and you're spending, you know, your weekends and nights where you should be finding more properties. And let's just say your profit per deal, whether it be a flip or a burr, is about $20,000 to $30,000 in pure equity. Then doesn't it make sense for you to be spending your time on the acquisition front than trying to save $100 per month on these properties? So I just want you guys to take a step back and look at the bigger picture in terms of growing the pie and increasing your revenue rather than reducing expenses. Now that I've discussed some of the advantages of having a property manager work for you, let's kind of talk about the various things that they do on a day-to-day basis and what that might entail to see if that's something that you might want to take on and self-manage. Maybe you just have one or two or three homes and you work part-time and you do have the capacity to learn and you're okay with learning as you go and making mistakes. So what entails the job description of a property manager? This is not by any means an exhaustive list, but some things that I wrote down is, number one, you're going to be advertising your property. So whether it be Zillow, Redfin, Trulia, or Craigslist, or just a separate website for all of your rental properties, you have to actively market them to be able to increase your tenant pool and have the opportunity to select the highest and best quality tenants. Now, you also want to make sure that you take really good photos, because that's a big difference between having, you know, 100 people apply versus having 50 people apply. Because pictures, you know, you've been in the shoes of being a renter or a home buyer, right? You want to make sure that even with the same rental, a professional photo can make a huge difference. Now, once they have advertised it, you need to show it. Some people like to just put a lockbox in there and just send people. I personally prefer that my property managers hold an open house, because I've personally been on the other side where if I go to an open house and I really like the property, I want to rent it. If I see four or five other individuals wanting to rent it as well, then I'm going to be more inclined to submit an application early. And it's really going to weed out the tire kickers from those who are really wanting to rent from you. Once you have received the applications, then you have to screen the tenants. And you want to make sure that the property manager is looking at the right criteria, whether it be, you know, have they had bankruptcies? Have they had evictions on their record? What is their credit score like? What is their income? Is it enough to cover the rents? These are all very important criteria that the property manager needs to develop a policy and really stick to that policy. It's not only a discrimination legal issue, but it's making sure that they have an agreed standard with the landlord to make sure that they're putting the right tenants in place. Once they have qualified a tenant, which usually is, you know, the most difficult part and it takes the longest time, then you're ready to sign the lease. So you sign the lease, and the term and the contract wording is very important. So make sure that you get a copy sample from the property manager and review it beforehand. And some of my property managers work on a 1-year minimum. Others do an 18-month minimum. But it really depends on the market and also the applicants as well. And then you have the move-in and move-out check-ins. So you want to have a checklist to make sure that when they move in, they notate the condition of the rental property, and the tenants will mark any issues that they find then and there. And also, same thing during the move-out, making sure that the leasing agent or the property manager documents the condition of the lease out. And this is to make sure that the tenant gets the security deposit that they're owed if they don't have any damages that they need to pay for. Last but not least is the actual rent collection and the processing and the bookkeeping. So this is a very crucial part, because you want to make sure that rents are collected timely, and if there are any issues with the collection, we want to communicate that. You have a set policy in place on how to communicate that language. And if they don't pay on time, then we're going to serve notice to evict. Again, this is one of those areas where a property manager that's experienced needs to have systems in place to dish out those eviction notices for non-payment in a timely manner. Because let's just imagine you have 30 doors with a certain property manager. In a typical scenario, let's just say a tenant needs to pay by January 1st and they get like a 5-day grace period, so they have until the 5th to pay. Well, the property manager, they can either process it that same month and do an owner distribution maybe middle of January, or some of the other PMs that I work with will hold off, process all of the invoices that come against that monthly rent, and then provide the owners with whatever's left in February. So they might be processed 1 month in arrears. And this is to make sure that the property manager does not need to float all of the maintenance order that comes in that same month, right? Because if I distribute all $1,000 after property management fees to the owners, let's just say like $920 or something, and then you get $500 worth of invoices. Well, if I've already sent that $920, then now I gotta float the $500 as a property manager. So you might get some property managers who will pay you 1 month in arrears, and that's typically normal. Well, the issue being is that if they don't have systems and processes to track late payments, charge those late fees, or send eviction notices, Well, you wait until February to get January payment, and you're like, hey, they've never made a payment. But now we've also lost like 3 weeks where we could have filed an eviction notice to get them out. Then you're typically waiting another month because it typically takes a couple weeks to process it and get a court date going. So this can really be dragged out. So you want to nip it in the bud and make sure that if there is a non-payment and there isn't any communication from the tenant that they're going to be paying you, you want to make sure that that gets filed in a timely manner. Now let's talk about actual maintenance of the property. So like I said earlier in these episodes, you want to make sure that there's a fine balance between making it into a solid rental versus not overdoing the rehab. But a critical component of that is making sure that there is little to no deferred maintenance. Usually your tenants are going to be good at submitting work orders and informing you of any leaks and or any issues that the landlord is responsible for fixing. But in the property management lease agreement, there should be clearly outlined items where the tenant is going to be responsible for if they break or damage. And also the tenant is responsible for notifying the property management in a certain time frame. So for example, if you have an active leak, the tenant just cannot sit on it and not inform the property manager because we do not have an opportunity to remediate the situation. So that's also another area that you as a landlord, if you hire a third party property manager, you need to review those agreements to make sure that those things are in there. You cannot just sit on the sidelines and just say, hey, I have a property manager, I don't have to do anything. You do have responsibility in terms of managing the property manager. So now that we've talked about all of the good things that a property manager can do for you in terms of saving time, saving money, and just being a good steward of that property, let's talk about how you can find one and what to look for when you're interviewing them. So my advice, just like anything else, is never to, you know, recreate the wheel or start from scratch. You want to make sure that you generate leads from multiple sources. And this is a principle that you can apply to anything, whether it be looking for houses or whether you're looking for a business partner, for example. You want to make sure that you tell everybody that you know what you're looking for. Be very specific. Hey, this is the type of property manager that I'm looking for. I want them to be in this market. I want them to have this many doors so that there is some economies of scale and not some fly-by-night property manager with like 20, 30 doors and they're using your portfolio to learn as they go. You know, I don't want to be the guinea pig, right? So you want to make sure that they have established roots in the community and that they care about their reputation, because property manager or agent or any contractors for that matter, if they don't care about their reputation, that's a huge red flag. So doing some Google searches, you know, searching them up in the Better Business Bureau, things of that nature, Trustpilot, if they have bad reviews and or on Google, they don't respond to any of the negative feedback, then that's a red flag for me, because that tells me that they don't care to even respond or rebut to that situation. Because as a newer person learning about that vendor or that business, you want to make sure, because there's two sides to every story. You want to make sure that they care about their reputation and they explain themselves if they're accused of something. So when you're picking a property manager and you're interviewing them, like I said earlier on, you want to make sure that communication is there. They need to be accessible via phone call or email. And it's not like they have to pick up every time or respond to your email within a couple hours, not by any means. They're busy people as well. But let's just say I email one of my property managers with a question. What I would expect them to do is within 24 hours, just acknowledge receipt. Maybe they don't have an answer for me right away, but just letting me know, hey, Bo, I got your email. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. So I think that's going to be important, because if they're that late in terms of responding to me, they take 2 to 3 days. How late are they going to be to our tenants? If a tenant has an issue and nobody responds to those issues, then your property is going to be in jeopardy. You also want to make sure that they don't have any hidden fees, or you want to align your incentive with theirs. And what I mean by that is, for me, I personally like a percentage of gross rents to be the PM fee. Some PMs, they charge a flat rate of $50 or $100 a door. And it might be good if your rent far exceeds that. For example, if your rent is $1,000 and the PM fee is $50 a door, then it's only 5% of gross rents. Well, I typically pay as a percentage 8 to 10%. So it's going to be $80 or $100 in that case. But what this allows me to do is find a property manager whose incentive is to make sure that the property stays occupied, because they don't make money if it's vacant. And they need to make sure that they collect the $1,000 and not just $200, because they're only going to get a portion of that. Instead of $100, they're going to get maybe $20, which is 10% of $200. So I want to align those incentives that way. Now, another question that I typically get from investors is that, hey, don't they use their in-house contractors to, you know, mark up maintenance fees and make their money that way? Well, that's a great question. In my case, I look for property managers who have in-house contractors so that I'm reducing costs on scalability of economy. And some PMs, they have a fee baked in. Maybe it's a 10% markup or a 12% markup on costs or labor. So just making sure that they're transparent on those. But in terms of the excessive maintenance, you as a landlord need to do a good job of reviewing the P&L and questioning if there is a huge variance. So what I like to do is, at least on a quarterly basis, I'm going to have my bookkeeping compared to the owner statement and just look through some of the big ticket items. I'm not going to waste my time on maybe a $10 or a $50 or $80 repair here and there. But if there are consistent like $400 leaks month after month, that's a red flag. I need to reach out to them and ask, hey, what's going on? Do you just need to replace something rather than try to continuously fix it? So that's an item that you're going to need to be working on. A good segue to that is, property managers are typically going to let you know, hey, anything above this threshold of $300 or $400, I'm just going to give you a heads up. Or if it's a really big purchase, like a new HVAC or a roof, I'm going to get three quotes to make sure that we get the best pricing. So those things are going to be really crucial in terms of making sure that the property manager isn't going to just settle on the first pricing or quote that they get. They're really going to work for you for your benefit. Now, just making sure that the property manager places the right tenant. Sometimes there is a fixed fee for tenant placement. My property managers generally have the first month's rent taken as their lease up commission. And what I actually like about some of my property managers is that that goes to the specific agent who leases up the deal. And that tenant needs to be verified by the property manager. So there is that check and balance between, they're not just going to stash anybody. Maybe the leasing agent wants to get their commission, but they still have to get through the property manager who needs to do the background check and qualify them. So it's not the same person who's finding it and approving the tenants as well. There might be some various fees. This really varies from property manager to property manager, whether they want to charge a separate fee for maybe spring and fall maintenance, just cleaning out the gutters, doing some landscaping, yard work, things of that nature. They may charge you separately for taking photos or doing the move-in and move-out inspections. I personally don't recommend these property managers have a myriad of menu items to charge you from. I feel like these incentives should be aligned with the 8 to 10% monthly fees, as well as the lease up commission. So make sure you find a property manager that is going to grow as you grow and those incentives are aligned. Once I received a listing of reputable property managers from various investor friends in the community and or just online searches and reviews, what I did was I set up a phone call with them just to interview them, introduce myself, and just get a vibe of who they are and if it might be a good fit. So, you know, this again is not an exhaustive list, and I'm happy to share this in our show notes or a separate blog post, but generally you want to ask them questions such as, hey, how long have you been in business? How many doors do you manage? What specific areas do you manage in? Do you just manage everywhere? For me, it's a red flag if they tell me, hey, in the Indy metro area, I just manage properties everywhere. It just tells me that they might not have the expertise in terms of the niche neighborhoods because it might be street by street. You want to make sure that they are specialized in what they do. I might ask them other questions such as, hey, do you have any specific marketing or advertising strategies? How many doors are currently vacant out of the total portfolio? What is the average time it takes to lease up a single family versus maybe a duplex, triplex, or quad? What kind of accounting software do you use for the owner statements? Do you have any evictions currently? And can you just walk me through a process of an eviction? So these are very standard questions that you should be able to ask your property manager. If they have any difficulty answering them, or if you feel like they're trying to hide anything from you, that's another red flag that you might want to interview the next person over. If you're looking for insurance coverage for your rental properties, the company that I trust is Ross Diversified Insurance Services, a national insurance agency that has been providing insurance coverage for real estate investors for over 30 years. Whether it's a rental or a fix and flip, Ross provides you coverage through A-rated insurance carriers to provide you with competitive rates, as one size does not fit all. Check out biggercashflow.com/RDIS to get your free quote today. When you're purchasing your first property or the next, you want to work with an experienced lender who's got your best interest in mind. Sean Huss at Chemical Bank has been a professional in the mortgage industry for over 25 years and has helped hundreds of investors like you and me grow their rental portfolio. With expertise in areas such as real estate sales, title and escrow, and the mortgage closing process, Sean is able to provide comprehensive counsel to guide you throughout this often complicated process. Check out biggercashflow.com/chemicalbank to get pre-qualified for free when you mention the Bigger Cashflow podcast. All right, so we've spent a lot of time talking about property management, how to find them, some of the questions that you might want to ask them. I wanted to segue over into helping find a good agent and or broker. So an agent in the real estate world is going to be that person who's going to help you find deals and make offers, whether it be on the MLS or pocket listings that they might have through their network or a prior client who might want to not list the property on the MLS right away, but send it to their broker or agent and just see, hey, what kind of opportunities are out there and see if we can do an off-market deal. So similarly to the property management side, you want to get a lot of referrals from your investor buddies and or online and interview them. Again, if you're local, it'll be nice to meet them over coffee or lunch and do a face-to-face. Maybe they can refer you to a couple of their happy clients, and you can just talk to them in terms of getting feedback of the cadence and the communication style, and making sure that as an investor, you might be making some lowball offers. Some agents don't like to make lowball offers. Maybe they think their reputation gets damaged. So if that's the case, that's totally fine. You might just want to work with an agent who's not afraid to submit lowball offers if you think that's a fair offer based on the condition, location of the property and whatnot. And also what's going to be critical is the volume. They're able to handle the quick pace. If you're an investor, time is money, and especially you have 12, 13 people looking at the same deals that you are in a hot market. If you're not able to pay the highest dollar, you want to make sure that you're at least the quickest, maybe with the least contingencies, and close the quickest. And your agent and broker needs to be able to work with you on some of those things. So those are some of the questions that I would definitely ask during the interview and just get a feel for what they're like and if they're newer investor friendly. As a newer investor, what I did was probably take a dozen or so referrals that I got. I called up all of them and see how quickly they respond to me, some of the questions. And because I was newer, I was asking some pretty basic questions and seeing if they were willing to coach me or if they're just getting annoyed and they don't want to train a newbie, that's totally fine. But for those who are willing to, you know, spend the time with me and educate me, then I would ask them those questions. Hey, why do you like this area? Just making sure that you're not sending me any deals. Just like the property manager that is in a specific neighborhood and a niche, maybe just like the south side of Indianapolis or the southeast side of Indianapolis, you want to make sure that your agent or broker has a specific reason of why they like to invest in that area. A critical question that you're going to have to ask them is, are the investors themselves? I've ran across a broker who buys the same deals that I do, which is awesome. It really tells me that they believe in the product. Sometimes it makes more sense for them to sell it to me via wholesale, just get in and get out quickly and just make their cut. Sometimes it makes sense for them to take it down themselves and flip it for a profit. So I like to see that my broker and or agent is also an investor, has a really good pulse on the market, and they're not just leaning on their investment experience of 5-10 years ago, because the market changes ever so often. Now, this is an area that might not be as easy in the beginning, just because if you really think of it from the agent's perspective, if you're just starting out, you're a nobody, and they don't even know if you're a buyer or just a tire kicker. So you want to make sure that you do your homework, you educate yourself, and you also don't waste the buyer agent or broker's time. So there's ways for you to do some due diligence beforehand and also be quick about the decisions that you're making. If you tell them you're going to get back to them by Wednesday with an answer, making sure that you keep that promise, or if you need more time for whatever reason, just communicating those things. So making sure that you do what you say you're going to do. Again, this is common sense. This is very obvious, but not a lot of people seem to do this. So if you do that, you're going to build trust with the agent and they're going to go out to bat for you. Another key area that I forgot to mention as it relates to property management and agents, brokers, or contractors is that you don't try to squeeze them for every dollar. I'm not saying don't negotiate any fees, but what I am saying is do not cut their profit to add to your profit. What I mean by that is to make the deal work, reducing the agent's commission from 3% maybe to 1.5% to make your deal a little bit better. You know, if you do those kind of things, people aren't going to want to work with you. You have to make sure, again, incentives are aligned and they're making money each time they work with you. I personally want all of the property manager, the broker, and the contractor, when I give them a call, they're excited to pick up because they know I'm going to pay on time. I'm going to not try to haggle them for every dollar, and I'm going to give them a lot of work. If you really do that, I feel like you're going to be successful in this business. And those people are really going to help you grow because it's in their interest to help you scale your properties. Another critical piece that the agent or broker needs to be able to do is help review the inspection response with you. They should have more insights into what makes a good rental property, what are some maintenance items that you need to negotiate a price reduction or back off entirely. You know, making sure that they know their numbers. If you're trying to buy 70 cents on the dollar so you can burr these properties, they need to fundamentally understand that every property that you buy needs some equity in the front end. Well, if you're working with a typical retail buyer's agent, they're not going to understand that. They're facing a different set of standards when it comes to home purchases. You as an investor need to make money on the front end when you buy. So if they're unable to provide you with estimated after repair values or help you negotiate through the inspection response period, or even come up with various creative strategies to salvage the deal, I can't tell you how many times where just by asking either for a price reduction or asking them to make a minor repair or maybe bundle in another property. There's so many creative ways that you can make a deal happen, and you just have to ask and you have to know of the various strategies. Now, last but not least, we're going to transition into finding the right contractor. So if you're trying to rehab the property and maybe do a cash out refinance with the equity, a critical piece is going to be your contractor and building trust. So there might be property managers or brokerages that do all of this in-house, use some of their maintenance crews to do light cosmetic rehabs. It makes it a little bit easier because everything is streamlined from the acquisition to the rehab to the property management. But there are going to be times where either they have no capacity or the job is just too big for them. Maybe they only do $20,000 worth of work and below, and you want to do a $60,000 flip or a $100,000 flip. So you want to make sure that you build relationship with various contractors. In terms of finding these guys, again, it's no secret. You're going to have to get referrals. You're going to have to look them up by word of mouth and or online and just interview them. And also ask them to take them to some of their project sites that they're working on. See the quality of work, maybe see a two or three of them. They should be able to show you, because a good contractor is always going to have work and maybe doing at least 5 to 6 projects at a given time if they have a couple crews working under them. So make sure that they're able to give you those referrals and those examples. When you're interviewing them and asking questions, ask them, hey, do you pull permits for your jobs? Are you able to give me itemized scopes that give a breakdown of labor and materials and the total cost? If they're just going to bundle it up and say kitchen rehab, $10,000, then it's really going to be difficult for you to really understand the true cost. And also from a quality control perspective, you want to understand line by line what kind of rehab that they're doing. Hey, are they just painting it? Are they replacing the cabinets? Maybe they're just replacing or refinishing the countertops. What is included in that kitchen renovation? You want to make sure that they itemize those out to protect them and to protect you. You also want to ask him about time to completion. Hey, you know, generally for this $40,000 rehab, is it going to be done in X amount of time? What happens if you don't finish in that period of time? Is there going to be a penalty applied so that I know that it's in your interest to finish this job on time? It's very important that the contractor is able to forecast and estimate. Again, this is going to be their best estimate, but if you tell me that it's going to take 4 weeks, I might add another week after that and say, every day after the fifth week, there's going to be a penalty or something of that nature so that we can come to an agreement. If I am doing a high-end flip and ordering custom cabinets and windows, those things take time to order. So once I close on a property, if I give them a material draw or if I order it myself, I know there's going to be some lag time. So I want to make sure that the contractor has experience and understanding when they're giving me this forecast. Now, you also want to make sure that communication is clear and what's entailed in that communication. Is it once a week I'm going to give you photos and videos as well as an itemized list of what's been completed? So what I like to typically do is if I already have the itemized scope, I just print it out and they highlight the ones that they have finished. Maybe, you know, only 80% of the kitchen is finished, then they're going to highlight the kitchen and put like 80%. and I work on a draw schedule, so I'm going to pay them based on that draw schedule, also based on percentage of work completed. I just let them know, hey, you can't get draw three until you have completed draw two. And if you're at 50% of draw two, we're going to have to get to that 100% for you to continue getting these draws. That just ensures that I don't have a ton of cash outlay out there and that I'm protecting myself as well. I also ask them, hey, do you provide receipts or warranties on all of the new appliances or some of the work that's being done to the property? Some of my contractors have a, you know, 6 month to 12 month even warranty on all of their work. They just really have pride and confidence in their work, which is a nice bonus for me. You want to make sure that you guys are aligned in terms of the material, color, things of that nature when you're doing the rehab. If you're going to do laminate flooring, engineered hardwood, luxury vinyl planks, you want to make sure that you guys are on the same page of the flooring. Also the paint color. You know, there's so many different shades of white or gray, the neutral two-tone paint. So you want to be as specific as possible. And once you have done a couple projects together, you're just going to create that cadence. So you want to make sure that the ship is pointing in the right direction from day one. Last but not least, you want to make sure that the contractor is licensed and bonded. Get copies of their licenses and all of their bonded insurance, because if they're going to be especially working on the roof and doing some other type of work, you want to make sure that they have the proper protection in place. So I know I covered a lot of ground there in terms of finding your property manager, your agent or broker, and last but not least, your contractor. Ultimately, these parties are going to be working in tandem. They're probably going to be interfacing with each other. And I like them to be independent of each other at times, because the broker is going to check the property manager, and the property manager is also going to check the rehab work of the contractor. So there is that checks and balances. But on the side, you also have your inspector, who's an independent third party, your appraiser from the lender side, and you also have other investor friends or yourself who can check out the property. So you want to make sure that you'll at least have three or four references that can check out the property and tell you the same thing. If two people are telling you one thing and two people are telling you another about the condition of the home, you know that something is wrong and you need to check that out. So that's another way that you can protect yourself. But again, like David Green said, your core four is going to be crucial in terms of the success of your business and your rental portfolio. So take the time to vet them, interview them. I highly recommend that you fly over to any out-of-state markets and then meet them up and build that relationship, so that you're not just a name in an email chain, but you're a face to the name in terms of the life of the partnership that you have with your core four. Next week, we're going to talk about financing your first rental. So it's going to be about the lending side. I'm going to talk about a couple of different strategies and also how to find your lender. So I've worked with your typical Fannie Mae lender. I've worked with local banks. I've worked with credit unions and commercial portfolio lenders. So I'm going to cover all of that in next week's episode. So make sure you guys come back next week for part four of this 7-part series in buying your first rental property in 2020. I hope that added a lot of value to your day. If you can, please do me a favor and leave us a review on iTunes. We'll see you right back here next week for another exciting episode of the Bigger Cash Flow Podcast. Thank you for listening to the Bigger Cash Flow Podcast. Please remember that opinions of the guests are their own, and nothing on this show should be considered personal or professional advice. Please consult your tax, legal, or financial advisor for personal advice that fit your unique situation. See you next time.